Welcome to the Lovejoy Hour, sponsored by Cooker, 100-degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. Mine does chilled filtered water and chilled sparkling filtered water too. In fact, I'm drinking that right now. Oh, the bubbles. Yes, the bubbles. It truly is delicious, honestly. Right, for more details, go to cooker.co.uk. Cooker spelled Q-U-O-O-K-E-R. Today's hour is 15 questions to Kaizer Chiefs frontman Ricky Wilson. As well as a frontman, Ricky is also a TV presenter. He's also an artist and he was a coach on The Voice. In fact, the two seasons he did it, he won both. Let's have a chat with him. Here's Ricky Wilson. Hi, Ricky. How are you?
I am very well indeed. Yeah, you're not supposed to say that at the moment. You're supposed to be a bit down about things, but I'm having an all right time. It's not bad for me, this.
What, you quite like the pandemic? Or you don't like the pandemic, but you like the results?
Taking into account if everything, if I'm going to look at silver linings, then actually it's been good for me not doing anything, not doing the band, doing things that I've been putting off for years. It's really good. So yeah, but I don't want people at home to think that, you know, hundreds of thousands of people are dying. Why am I saying that? Because, you know, you've got to sometimes think about just in the moment what's going on, and, you know, put aside everything else and just go, is this good for you? And it's been all right.
I've spoken a lot about this to a lot of my guests, that when you enter the entertainment industry, as we are, you're scared to turn work down and you're scared to take your foot off the gas in case it all goes away. Is that how you feel?
Well, when it goes away for everyone, it's pretty good. So it's you know what I mean? It's like you don't feel that you're in a race anymore, you know. And it's actually been nice because it's made me realize that I wasn't in a race. You know, I can just do what I do. And if, you know, it doesn't matter to me if Tom Grennan's got a single out, because it's nothing to do with me. And it doesn't matter if, I don't know, I can't think of another, Jessie J is doing anything. It doesn't matter. They can get on with their thing. There's room for everyone, you know?
Yeah.
So I've enjoyed that.
Do you ever think about a time where it all goes away? Because I have these thoughts constantly. There was a time when when BBC decided to get rid of the Sunday show.
Yeah.
Before Channel 4 took it on, where everyone was going, surely the BBC are going to come in and rescue this show. And I was like, well, maybe that's it. My time's up. Maybe that's it. And I started thinking, right, I'm going to start by just going to try and get a bar job, and then maybe I'll do a post round as well, and then I'll see if I can get a job. And I just started thinking about it.
Of course, I think about it all the time. But then I do start comparing myself to other people, because if things did stop tomorrow, I could find something to do.
Yeah,
and then I think about a lot of people. I don't want to diss anyone, but there's a lot of people that live and die by, you know, the reality show culture. And this sounds like I'm dissing it. I'm not, because it's a great career, guys. But you notice that they start, you know, maybe having a baby, because that might help get a bit more work. And you go, I'm not clinging on by my fingernails just yet. You know,
yeah.
My flag's still flying. You know, I might have to wait around longer for gusts of wind to make it blow. But I'll always do all right, I think. And I quite like the fact that, you know, like in Jurassic Park, life will find a way. I'll find something. Do you know what I mean?
It's a challenge, yeah. All right, let's get on with these questions. What piece of advice would you like to give our listeners that has been invaluable to your life?
I think this is a quote by Mark Twain.
Ooh.
I think. But I might get the words wrong.
Okay.
And it's better to keep your mouth shut and have people think you're an idiot than to open it and remove all the doubt.
Yeah, well, that's social media for you, isn't it?
It's social media. It's also what makes me avoid anything where, you know, because people do say, as a pop star, you do have a responsibility of social commentary, which I'm not 100% behind. I do feel if you feel strongly about something, you should say something. But I get invited on a lot of things, not quite Question Time, but similar things. Because I think it's kind of fairly obvious which way I politically lean, but I don't, you know, I'm no Lawrence Fox. And I don't want to, you know, I'm not clever enough to hold my own in those kind of conversations. So I avoid them, which means I often get, accused of not saying enough.
What's your relationship like with social media then?
Well, I really like it. I mean, I think that, you know, people talk about the negatives a lot, but it's just the same in life, really. You choose what to take from it, and I really like it. I'm not obsessed by it. I look at it a lot. I've turned off that thing on your phone that tells you how much time you spend on different things.
Haven't we all?
You know, because there are some afternoons, especially during the pandemic, where you get into that kind of triangle between just going to Twitter, Instagram, the news. Twitter, Instagram, the news. And then you think to yourself, have I done Twitter as the last one? And you can be there for an hour. But it's I think it's quite nice. And all the negative things about you create your own bubble, so you think everyone thinks the same as you. You know, it's its own ecosystem. It's actually quite nice to create your own little group of people you never met that you are like-minded with. And then you throw in a few that you don't agree with just to give you a laugh.
The worst thing I think you can ever do is download TikTok, because that thing is so addictive. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been on it. That or Reels on Instagram. It's just like you just keep watching people dance in different ways.
Yeah, I did go through a TikTok stage. I haven't done anything on it, but I do. Grace likes watching it, and I do think it's pretty good, but you can lose hours. Obviously, I'm in the music industry, so they're on at me to start my own TikTok, because apparently that will help with something. And I'm like, well, surely a really good record would help as well.
Do you know what? You know what's interesting? Just going back to Twitter there, I realized this the other day that there's some, you know, when you're in an argument with someone, right? I'm having an argument with you, and then we walk away, and then I'm replaying it in my mind, and I think I want to say that to you, and I want to say that.
Yeah,
a lot of celebrities out there who are like, they mean well. We all know they mean well, but they go online and they start arguing with people. I don't know, let's just choose one subject, which is Brexit. Choose Brexit, and then every day they go back to go, right, here's another point about it. Here's that. And they're like, oh, and you just want to take them to one side. Or Trump was a big one. Seriously, just stop tweeting, because you're not doing anything. It's mental.
You're digging a hole. And also, from my point of view, when I'm going back to the responsibility of pop stars to have a political standpoint, is that I got into it as an escape from that.
Yeah,
and it's the release. It's not. I do stuff with Amnesty because it's not political, and it's basically be a good person, which no one can really argue with Amnesty, I don't think. But as soon as people take a side on Twitter, I kind of think, you know, we want to take them to sides. Just can you just drown that out with some videos of cats, just to get rid of that? Because you will be labelled with that. And then they get phoned up by TV and say, oh, will you come on this talk radio to talk about your feelings about that? And I'm, you know what? There is a lot more clever people than me who will make the point that I'm just rehashing with worse words, like I did with the Mark Twain quote. Yeah.
We'll move on. But my other thing about it is that I just change my mind constantly. I don't know.
That's brilliant. That's what people should be able to change their mind. Great.
Yeah. I'm not stuck in it at all, or anything. And then someone says to me X about something, I go, okay, that could be quite interesting. And then what, you know, and I just, so I'm never that sure about anything, apart from the obvious things. Right, let's move on.
I was just going to say then, because we'll talk about this later in relationships, because I don't argue, right? Because I don't see the point in it. And I'd like to argue more, but I never saw the point in arguing, even for a kid, because the definition of it is both people think they're right. And yeah. There's no way out of that, really. I've never had an argument where halfway through someone goes, ah, yeah, you were right. You know what I mean? It's just perpetuating itself.
Well, I've had my mind open up about a lot of things on this podcast, especially the big one, which is the legalization of drugs, or the drug reform is a better way of putting it. Right. But since I've been born, I've been brainwashed to think all drugs are bad and make them illegal, yeah, and that's best for society. Then when you actually look into it and you realize best for society is not to make something illegal because people start shooting each other for it, we can go into all the arguments, but it'd take forever. But that was really, big moment with changing in my life, things like that, which I listened to. And then I think, that's different. I really didn't believe that. But with the pandemic, my mind is changing hourly. Hourly, I change on that. I just never know what to think on that one. All right, let's go on to the next one. What is the best moment of your career?
I've got two examples of this, both different reasons. There was one gig I did, and it was in 2007. We were playing two nights at Manchester Arena, but the second night, I can remember thinking, it'll never get better than that. And it just, everything went perfectly. I felt like, you know, when you watch, I don't know much about football, but when you watch someone go from one end of the pitch to the other on their own,
yeah,
and score a goal, it felt like nothing could touch me. That it was amazing. So that was the best gig, and it's the only one I've kept a poster for. So I went and asked for a poster, and they gave me a poster. Cost a fortune to get framed. It's massive. I was just doing up a house, and I won't be allowed it in the new house. That's what attics are for. But that I don't know what was so special about it, but it was just a real kind of like that's. And also, it was in Manchester. I love doing gigs in Manchester because we're from Leeds, and they really make you work for it. Because you know, there's a bit of opposition there, but I think when you do good in Manchester, they really appreciate it. I love playing in Leeds as well. Don't get me wrong, but there's an aspect in Leeds where they're really expecting us to be good, and in Manchester, although they've paid to come and see us, they're kind of thinking stuff. Go on then, prove yourself.
How does that work? The War of the Roses stuff. Who do the Roses? Do they hate each other more than they hate London, or does everyone hate London the most?
Yeah, London's the worst.
Good. Good.
I live here now. I live in London now. I'm like a spy. Covert. But the other, I've got two for this as well. So the other one was. And this is just the moment where I thought, crikey. So Jules Holland Hootenanny was always a bit of fun. But we were rehearsing once, and for some reason, the TARDIS was there. And I was stood in the TARDIS checking out. And then Paul McCartney was rehearsing Get Back. And I opened the door, and I was just stood in the door of the TARDIS watching Paul McCartney playing Get Back. And I was like, this is kind of, it doesn't get better than this. and I might refer to this story later on as well in the fashion moment. But that was just, I thought, you know, I felt like Doctor Who, gone back in time and seen the Beatles.
Is there like an aura around Paul McCartney? Because I love listening to him be interviewed. He's just.
There is, but he spent all his life being Paul McCartney, and people treating him the way they treat Paul McCartney. That he's very good at understanding the way people are around him.
Yeah.
And it makes you feel instantly like relaxed about it.
Okay.
Because obviously he's very used to people being a bit weird and starstruck. So he instantly diffuses the situation, and you just feel to yourself, oh man, I'm friends with Paul McCartney.
That's great. What's the worst moment of your career?
All right. This is tricky because I don't, yeah. Before we were signed, there was no other option really. It was like I had other jobs and stuff like that, and life would have been bearable, but we just kept having record labels come up here, and we kept visiting them. And the thing about, they don't call you back and say no, and sometimes in life all you want is a no, so yeah, you can move on, you know. It's like loads of stuff I've got up in the air at the moment. I would just prefer someone to say no than go, we'll review it when the pandemic's over and we'll see what happens here. Because then I can move on mentally. But it was really hard time having just not being ignored, just being to the point where it must have been a certain madness that kept us going, because we were turned down by literally everyone. everyone, and we just kept going, and we didn't think there was a possibility of anything, it was going to happen. But obviously there were days during that where you suddenly think to yourself, what am I playing at? I mean, I was old, 26 when I got signed. So, which is ancient in pop years. It's the opposite to dog years. And, and one of the band pointed out that George Harrison was 26 when the Beatles finished. And I was like, oh my God, what am I doing? Mm. You know, my friends were buying cars and stuff and becoming doctors. And I was trying on shades.
Well, so, yeah. it worked out in the end, didn't it?
So it worked out. Worst moment of career. That's not really of my career. I mean, there have been low points, but this what makes, you know, I'd rather have a career that the graph went up and down than a lot of them that just went up and then totally dropped off.
Yeah.
So the low points inform the high points. So I can't think of anything during the last 15 years that I felt was... Career-wise, it's been fine. No, my life, that's been awful.
What does success mean to you?
It's weird because I'm quite money orientated. Not because I've got lots of things. Like, I don't have a car collection and flash stuff and stuff like that. But I do think it's a good indicator of the success I've had. But that's because success, I don't think... If you're driven, you ever feel like you've been successful, because you feel like it's always just out of reach, like fog. You know what I mean? It's always just there, and when you get there, it's just a bit further. So I can't really define it, because I'm never going to have it. But for a guy from Leeds in an indie band, I've been very successful because of the house I live in. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
So I can only really define it by that. But, you know, whether it's achievements and stuff like that, I always feel like I'm underachieving.
What's it like being what do you call yourself? A pop star, rock star? What do you call yourself?
International pop.
Playboy.
Pop star. If someone says, what do you do? I say, I'm a pop star.
What was it like being a pop star? Because, you know, what I like is you're smart. You got it late, so you've got an adult. And and you've not got a huge ego. So what's it like being a pop star for?
Well, it's really interesting because I do meet a lot of other pop stars, and they do tend to fall into two camps. And there's my camp, and there's the ones that really believe it. Like, they believe it's changed them in some way. And it might change the way people perceive them, but it doesn't change you, really. But the people that believe it, that don't understand that it's all smoke and mirrors, and don't understand that it will get taken away at some point. There'll be a day when you put a single out and Radio 1 won't play it, and you'll think it's the worst point in your life, but then you realise that, you know, loads more people listen to Radio 2. And you've moved on to that bit of your career. So it's fine. But, you know, you must have met them, especially on Sunday brunch. They come in and you're just like going, I've hardly heard of you. And you're acting like it works for some people, but it must be horrible when they realize, and they will realize at some point in life, that, you know, they're sitting at the end of the bar telling stories about the time they were on Sunday brunch.
My mate has a theory that the age you become famous at, you kind of stay at that age for quite a long time.
Grace was talking about this yesterday. She's reading a book about it.
Right. So you see, Michael Jackson ended up just being a child.
Yeah.
Life.
Yeah,
a lot of the footballers, maybe, and sportsmen seem quite childish because they got fame when they were 17, you know, 16.
It's a real thing. It's a real thing. And so I was 26, which is a good age to stay at.
Yeah.
No, but if you were going to choose an age to stay for the rest of your life, I think, you know, mid to late 20s is a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, I was the same when Soccer AM happened.
It's a good age. Really, you don't get hangovers, and you know, you can bounce back, go straight back to work. It's brilliant.
Yeah,
fit in your clothes.
Just back on the pop star bit though.
Yeah. Like,
the thing that I think people don't realize is there's huge highs and huge lows. The energy coming in and out of you. when you stand on a stage and you've got like a Manchester, as you just said, or you're back home in Leeds, and you've got that crowd absolutely like in awe of you. And then you walk off stage and you're back to being Ricky Wilson. When the tour ends, when you're on tour, you've got security, you've got catering, you've got people running around up your ass going, I love you. The tour ends, you're just Ricky Wilson again. And you've got to start all over again with the album. Those highs and lows must be quite a hard thing to deal with, which is why often rock stars go off the road and just keep keep living the highs.
I do wonder about that, but I've always been in a band, which must help, because it's just boys, you know, and they know what you really like. Mm-hmm. And they let me do my thing on stage, but if you think I'm acting like that in the dressing room, then, you know, it'd be horrible if I was swinging off the chandeliers and stuff. Not that we have dressing rooms and chandeliers, it's a porter cabin usually. But yeah, it's kind of, it is a weird, but, you know, I think we just realized, I think I'm all right with the highs and lows, because it's not, it doesn't really matter. I dealt with it pretty well, I think. You know, I don't even really like that guy on the stage. He's a big show off. And I'm not the leader of the band behind the scenes. But as soon as we're invited to go on a TV show or a radio show, or as soon as we walk out on stage, I am the leader for that amount of time. But I don't really want to be the rest of the time. So that's it. The dynamic we've fallen into, it's kind of happened quite naturally, because they don't like showbiz. And I bloody love it. Of course, it's too much. Honestly, I love it. When we're invited to go on like TV, I turn up early. I love sitting there watching everyone doing the job. You know, like, you know, we're on Saturday Night Takeaway the other day. And I was just like, I arrived like an hour early just to like watch rehearsals, because I love it. It's brilliant. Mm.
Well, we always, when you come on Sunday brunch, we always love having you on, because we know you're going to join in, and we know you're going to have right, you know, good attitude to give the show an edge, but, you know, like a music rock and roll sort of type vibe to it. but you're going to still join in and have fun. Well, you know, when we put food, well, the last time you came on, we made you paint with food, but that's pretty
good. I enjoyed that. But the that's the other thing. It's like you see so many people going on TV shows and not joining in, and you're just like, well, don't go on it then. It's like, you know, I used to go, we were so annoying at all the awards ceremonies, because we'd turn up going, this is brilliant. We're at the Brits. We're at the NME Awards. This is amazing. And you get loads of people like walking in, acting like they'd 100% rather be somewhere else, but on the inside thinking like we were thinking. I was just give in. Just enjoy it. Like, you get people coming on Sunday brunch and they're acting like too cool. I'm going, don't pretend like you don't watch it every weekend. Don't, you know, this annoys me about, this is like a similar thing, but it really annoys me about Twitter. When I put something up, like the other day I put, man, I hate drying up Tupperware, right? Because it's a bastard to dry up. And as soon as I put that, I get loads of people saying, it's not very rock and roll. I'm saying, what do you think I'm doing at home? You think I'm like living a rock and roll lifestyle, whatever that is. Right. Because if I did, I'd be dead. Right. Or, you know, or I don't have someone to, I'm not that successful. I'm not in the Killers. I don't have someone to dry up my Tupperware.
I always quote this. Suggs always said, when I said to him on this podcast, I said, what's the success of keeping a band together? He goes, have a good time. You got the best job in the world. Enjoy it. And I just thought that was really good. Right. What other jobs did you do? We kind of know this as well.
Yeah.
You're an art teacher.
I was an art teacher, art lecturer at Leeds College. But that was, I mean, I built that up bigger than it was. I did a year and it was a very unsuccessful year. I wasn't good at it. It was far too much about admin for my liking. Lots of forms to fill in. And I really did think it was going to be Dead Poets Society and, you know, standing on desks and we're going to change the world. But it wasn't. And I did enjoy it. And there were lots of good points to it. But it wasn't as freewheeling as it was expecting.
What's made you in your career decide to do things like the TV show Art Jam, which was great? By the way, we had Nick Grimshaw on the show this week. You'd been on 2 weeks before, and you'd made him that amazing. You'll have to go online if you're listening to this and have a look. But Ricky made this amazing light for him, a bedside light type thing it was. And I said to him, what have you done with it? Have you kept it? He goes, yeah, it's brilliant. And he goes,
really?
Yeah, and he said, I was expecting it to be crap. And then I turned around and it was brilliant. Basically, Ricky got loads of stuff from his career, like represent his career, things like a radio mic and radio headphones and stuff like that. Yeah. And then he sprayed it all gold and made a brilliant lamp out of it. It was very impressive.
I really enjoyed doing that. And to be honest, it's back to your first question, what made you do it? I was just thinking, you know, I can't physically jump around on stage forever. And we haven't got the songs for me to stand still or sit on a stool and do it. And I'm going, at some point, I'm going to have to do something else because I can't retire because I'd send Grace mad. And so I thought, I better start just saying yes to things that I'd usually say no to. And the only reason I'd say no was because in some way I thought wouldn't be cool. Oh, God. And then you have to sit back and you go to yourself, I was cool for like 15 minutes in 2004. And ever since then, I've been a pop star. And the same thing happened with The Voice. So that's another job I did. Mm. And you know, I was terrified about doing that.
You're good on that. You won both series. I just mentioned it.
Yeah. And for some reason, I thought this could go terribly wrong. But it's like, I'm not going to, if I just be myself, I'm not going to say anything that's going to get me like cancelled. Because I haven't really got any of those opinions. So it's not going to slip out. You know what I mean? It's not like I've got this mask on. And I'm horribly, horribly, you know, something phobic. You know what I mean? So I just started saying yes to things that I thought were weird. And in the past, I wouldn't have done them because it wasn't cool. But then, you know, I think it's the coolest thing Kaiser Chiefs ever did was sell millions of records. It wasn't selling out a 25-capacity club that was apparently cool. Because no one's there to see it. It's like a tree in a forest. If something's cool in a forest, there's nothing there to see it. It's not cool.
Mm. Actually, it's really interesting because Denise Van Outen was on this podcast recently. She's said yes to loads, and she was talking all about the things that she's done, which were failures, but she didn't care because she just likes doing it and learning. And I keep thinking to myself, I've turned down so much stuff in the past because I don't think it's cool. And I, you know, Soccer AM, Sunday Brunch, something for the weekend. I've done XFM. You know, I've done.
Yeah, it might affect your brand. And you're going, but especially nowadays, things are speeding up so much. It really doesn't matter. You just move on to the next thing. And also, even when I was on The Voice, I thought it was the most important thing in the world to everybody, right? Because when you're doing something, you just imagine the whole country's watching it. And then you realize they're not, right? Now I'm not on it anymore. I don't watch it for obvious reasons. I'm not on it, right? But I don't even know what's happening on it. And I don't really care. But when you're on it, you think this is everyone must be obsessing on everything I'm saying. And they're not. You just move on to the next thing.
Next question. What's your outstanding fashion moment?
When David Tennant joined Doctor Who, the people who were doing his costume based his outfit on the look that I was sporting at the time.
Really? How do you know that?
David Tennant told me.
Whoa. And what was that? Were the turn-ups?
It was the suit, basically. I had this blue suit, so they gave him a blue suit. But that kind of like, you know, smart, but I can't believe that every morning I used to wake up in the early days of the band on a tour bus, knackered, hungover, put on a tie. I mean, that's weird to think about that. Tie on, you know, winkle pickers on. You know what I mean? I thought, like, what was I playing at?
No, the tie thing was fashionable. I used to wear it on something for the weekend, jumper and tie, shirt and tie. It was really... You used to wear, for a while, didn't you wear eyeliner?
A lot, yeah. Yeah, I did.
Doing that?
No, because I just look like I'm too old for it now. It only works on a baby face because as soon as you get wrinkles, you kind of, it doesn't work as well. You look like, what's that guy, Presuming Ed from With Nell and I? You know, you get that that older look and you go, oh no, it's not good.
I still think Robert Smith looks good with his makeup.
But he can't not. Well, the thing is, he doesn't take it off. Probably if you saw him walking down the street, you wouldn't know it was Robert Smith. Grace saw Boy George and Morrison's the other day, and I know Boy George, and they know each other. And it took her ages to, she was going, I know that guy. Who is
it? That's great.
But, you know, he wasn't dressed as Boy George.
Whenever I want to cheer myself up, I watch the Robert Smith thing when they're...
I know.
Hall of Fame. Yeah. The girl goes, he was excited as I am. And he goes, by the looks of things.
Looks of it, no. I love that. Oh, that is honestly brilliant. Love it. Fashion moment. I want to say another one before I forget. So I stepped out of the TARDIS watching Paul McCartney playing Get Back, and I was wearing a coat that I just got from Aquascutum, which for me at the time was a big purchase, you know. And I went over to Paul McCartney. We had a chat. He goes, I really like your coat. Where'd you get it? I said, oh, it's Aquascutum. He goes, oh, do you get it for free? And I went, no, I bought it because I get a lot of stuff for free, and it kind of ruins the brand for me when I get it for free, because then I never want to buy it again. I don't know if you've had been this situation. So if like one company, trainer company, let's say, give me a load of trainers, it stops me from ever buying them again, because I always think, well, I got them free once, why would I pay for them ever again? So, and I said, no. And anyways, it's the same with me and guitars. People give them to me all the time. And the ones that they give me, I never play. But the ones that I bought, you know, I feel like, you know, I really love playing them, because I feel like I've invested, you know, something, you know. And I was like, all right, that's good. End of conversation. A few days later, he's divorcing Heather Mills at the time. He's coming out of court. He's wearing my coat. So I thought, he's seen me wear it. He's asked me where I've got it. He's gone and got one. That's an outstanding fashion moment.
Doctor Who and Paul McCartney.
In one week. That was a good week for me.
I thought a pretty good impression, by the way, of Paul McCartney there. You've got that one down.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I do all the Beatles.
Someone once told me once that that you never get, well, it's a classic, but someone who I won't say who it was, but someone who's a big manager said to me, Tim, you need to learn nothing comes for free. If you want something, go and buy it, because otherwise you owe someone something, and they always call in their debts. Do you do John Lennon then?
Why don't you do it? why? No, because he's like that, isn't he? You know, he's like that. So he goes, that's him, yeah.
It's just a bit of Liam Gallagher, that, isn't it?
Could be your, that could be your career in the future.
Why don't you do something like that?
Yeah.
Something like that. It's a bit Ringo? Too nasally.
Can you do Ringo?
Of course I can. The thing about doing Ringo is it often sounds a bit too much like Gary Barlow.
They've
got a very similar voice. No one can do George. No one can do George. They don't bother going there.
You're good. We're pleased to say today's podcast is sponsored by Baroni, fresh frozen pasta now in the freezer aisles in Waitrose. Yes, I did say that, frozen pasta. It's the same pasta that's used in restaurants around the country. What they do is they cook it al dente and then they immediately freeze it. So it has no additives or preservatives in it. All you have to do is drop it in a pan of boiling water and give it a stir. It's ready to serve in only 30 seconds. This stuff is truly delicious. Thank you for sponsoring the podcast. What do you do to keep fit?
All right, keep fit. I made up a diet. Cool. And I wouldn't follow this. You can if you want, but it's I can lose and gain weight very quickly. So if ever I've got big TV, give me 2.5-3 weeks, I'll be match fit. And, you know, I've been 2 stone heavier than I'm now in lockdown. So I can do it fairly quickly, but I invented this diet, and I don't want any nutritionists saying it's bad, because it works for me and I've never been healthier. If I want to lose weight, and I've even given it a name, it's called the 1-2-3-4 diet, right?
Okay.
Forget the one for a minute. So for breakfast, it's a calorie counting diet. You have breakfast with the amount of calories, anything beginning with 2. So 200 to 299 calories.
Okay. For breakfast.
Lunch, 300 to 399. As long as it starts with a 3, that's fine. Dinner, 400 to 499. And then you'll have snacks, but it can only start with 100. So 150, 160, you know what I mean? So to stick to that 1-2-3-4 diet, I mean, you never have more than, let's work out, 1,200 calories a day. And it works for me. That's how I keep fit.
Right.
Let's have a keep thin.
How many calories are we allowed? I never know.
About 2,000 to 2,400, something like that.
Right. Okay. How do you measure calories in your food? How
I get an app. It's free, and most of the time I just guess it from what the packet says. And so, but it's got a barcode scanner as well. So you scan a barcode and it goes in. But That's how I do it.
So you
and also if you do it enough with calorie counting, you kind of know certain things.
All right. What do you have for breakfast on your two?
Well, I'm not actually having breakfast at the moment because
intermittent fasting.
I am, yeah. Which is so I don't really have. I wait till lunch, then I have a massive salad, and it's weird as well because you have to. The way I do it is, I retrain my brain for treats. This isn't very rock and roll. In fact, I never give this kind of stuff away because I always think I'd rather people think that I did what the hell I wanted rather than think about it. So if I retrain my brain to what's a treat, everything becomes enjoyable. And I'm having salads going, this is the best thing I've ever had. And that's only because I'm starving. And then I do that for a bit and then I get bored of that. And then I put on loads of weight because I do that and then I'll do it again.
Yeah, but and I never... You got to be careful though, because the older you get, the harder it is. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
About it. So,
but the harder it is, I also weirdly, which you can't make people do, is I actually really enjoy going on a diet because it gives me something to think about, and I really enjoy competing with myself on that. You know, it's like a game.
Yeah, I'm like that. I have to be.
Well, no, yeah, and obviously this can be a slippery slope, and I really don't want anyone to.
Yeah, when I was on Soccer M, we once said, right, from the last meal at night, you're not allowed to eat for 24 hours, right? That's it. We all said that, and we all came in, and by lunchtime, a load of them were eating pie and chips because they were so hungry. Yeah. By the time we got to early evening, people are snacking on crisps and everything. I think I went 1.5, maybe 2 days because I just thought, right, I'm going to just do it. But, you know, it's not that hard not to eat for 24 hours, though it is when you decide to do it. It's like a really hard thing.
Because, you know, you can forget, because Grace doesn't understand how I can forget to have lunch. She doesn't understand it because it's all she thinks about. But I just forget sometimes. But, you know, I do understand that mentality of making a game, but I don't, you know, people always say if you're on a diet, if you're trying to stop drinking or anything, you just get rid of it from your house.
Yeah.
That makes it worse for me. If I've got it in a cupboard, I feel like, well, I could have it. I can have it whenever I want. And that makes me feel like I've got stronger willpower.
You're like punishing yourself. Right.
I run every day. That keeps me fit.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
How far are you running?
Eight kilometers a day.
That's good.
If I go to 10, then it makes it too long. And I really want to get it done like 35 to 40 minutes out.
All right. Tell our listeners something that's been life-changing for you.
Obviously meeting Grace Zito, my fiance, but she said if I didn't say that, I'd be in trouble. Moving on though. The most life-changing thing was I didn't get in to Central St. Martin's to do fine art. And it's what, you know, in your life, sometimes you've got these things that you think, if I don't do that, it really worries me on TV talent shows where people are just like, it's this, or if I don't win, my life's over.
Yeah.
But I'd had that with going to Central St. Martin's was all I ever wanted to do and just assumed it had happened to the point where I'd never thought about it not happening. And then you get the letter saying you're not in. And it was weird. It was such a kind of weird turnaround day when you go, all right, that is a real spanner in the works. But it was the best thing that ever happened. Best thing. Because it made me stay in Leeds. I tried to get on fine art in Leeds. It'd run out of spaces. So I went to see this woman called Alice. And she ran the foundation course I did in fine art. And she said she couldn't get me on fine art, but I could do graphics. I didn't know what graphics was, but I just wanted to do something. Because I think that university was only going to be free for a bit longer. And I had to get in under the radar before they started charging like, I don't know, 10 grand a year or something, whatever it is. So I did graphic design and it was brilliant. Loved it. Because it's basically, you can do fine art, but at the end of it, it has to have a purpose. And I enjoyed it a lot more because of that. Because it makes it a lot less self-centered.
It's when I was looking you up, it was weird because it's like Leeds Grammar School or something, Leeds that, and then Leeds University. And you thought, well, I thought that's really weird that you wouldn't choose to leave Leeds to go. Now I get it.
Yeah, I was desperate to, but then I stayed. And then in the course of the 3 years I was there doing my BA, the band started to be my main emphasis. And then even half my work at university was about the band. And half of that was me trying to do fine art on a graphics degree.
Mm.
But I did really well. I remember I made me and my friend Ben, we handed in for one project, taking it for its graphic design, handed in a radio play. And then we went to like the, I don't know what you call it. It's like a meeting about why you've done it. And we knew we were going to get the mark in the meeting because we just then argued why it was graphic design for 2 hours. And we both got first. So it worked.
Were you always good at art? I when I went to my school, we didn't really talk much about art. And then I was told I was a bit rubbish one day when I drew something.
I enjoyed it. I really, because someone probably once said when I was really young, you're quite good at that.
Yeah.
And when you're young and someone says you're quite good at something, you spend all your time thinking, now I've found my thing.
Yeah.
So that was it. I was never the best, but I was second best.
I do a lot of art with my 7-year-old now, and I absolutely love it. Mm. I can't tell you how much I love it. It's like mindfulness, as they say these days. And I just can't get enough of just sitting around drawing with her and
totally.
Just painting. And I buy a mask to decorate, and we just do all sorts of stuff. And I bought a plasticine the other day, and we were making little...
Plasticine's good stuff.
Yeah, it's just really good fun.
But which I didn't realize how mindful it was until I did Art Jam. The kids TV show I do, when because it's TV, you have to talk about it while you're doing it, and I was getting so frustrated having to talk about it while I was doing it because I didn't want to. I was like, I like this doing it quietly with my tongue sticking out, you know. Mm. And then I'm going, so now I'm going to get some bread, you know what I mean? I'm like, oh, do I have to talk about it? And at points I'd say, right, I really need to do this bit now, so can we just, you can film me, I'm just going to do it because I can't talk about it and do it at the same time. I'm not quite at Buchanan's level yet.
And the thing about you're good, I really enjoyed that show. The thing about art, which is the pandemic's really made this hit home with me, is art is so important because if you've got an opinion and you've got a loud hailer, all the people on your side go, yeah, I agree with you. And all the people who are looking at you with a loud hailer going, I hate you and I don't like your opinion. Loud hailers don't do anything. A loud hailer doesn't change someone's mind, whereas a lyric, a painting, a Banksy drawing, a stand-up comic routine, all of this stuff can completely change your mind in the way you perceive something.
I'd explain that again, but you just did it perfectly. You're exactly right, because I think a lot about, I should probably listen to Mark Twain and not say this, but I think a lot about how the fact that a lot of this loud hailer stuff, it gets the backs up more of people that didn't care. And now they've got a reason to be opposed to something that they didn't care about before. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Like let's talk about a subject that's not going to get in trouble. Like Meghan and Harry, right?
Oh, that'll get you in trouble.
Well, yeah, but you know what I mean? It's not like, it's not, you know, yeah, but it's like before the TV show, like no one really cared.
Yeah.
I mean, no one, it wasn't changing our lives. And then that happened. And it's like, now it feels a bit like it's so divisive. There's people that like them and the people that don't like them. And it puts you into two camps. And it's like, but does it matter? You know what I mean? There's far, even involved in that discussion about Meghan Harry, there's far bigger subjects to worry about than those two. Yeah. And I mean, I like Harry. I've never met Meghan, but I like Harry. He's always been very generous with his time. But the only thing is, I've got loads of pictures with him, but I didn't put them on social media because he once made a flippant comment about saying, don't put that on Instagram. And I haven't. And then I'm thinking, did he mean it? Or was he being like funny? We're not doing anything. We're not like, you know, we're not up to something.
Did he come and watch one of the gigs?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
All right. Next question. What were you like at school?
I've no idea. I mean, it's weird. I read a lot of autobiographies because I love them. And it makes me just think that people lie a lot in their autobiographies because they always remember everything. And they talk about a great detail about what they were like as kids. I think, I don't know. They have such vivid memories. I just think you're making it up. And, you know, it's really easy because obviously I think I was a fairly shy child. And then if you spoke to someone from my school, they'd go, no, you fucking weren't. Mm. You know, but I just assume... I just got on with it.
I'm gonna sound a real bell end here, but when you're on TV or famous like yourself, every now and then someone will send you a picture of you somewhere, and you have absolutely no idea, memory of that thing, and you look and go, where is that from?
Have you ever like zoomed in to look at your shoes and go, I don't even remember the shoes. I turned into it. Oh, you get upset. Mm. I wonder where that jumper is. That was a good jumper. You know what I mean?
I was a researcher on the OBs on Big Breakfast, and I was out with Richard Orford, and we'd gone up to Liverpool, and Jerry Marsden, ferry across the Mersey, was going to sing his song or something when we were up there. And I was a researcher, and I was stood there, and someone had taken a picture of me in the crowd and then sent it to me years later when I was on TV. And well, actually only about 2-3 years ago, they sent it to me. And I was like, how the hell do you remember that picture has me in it when I wasn't on TV at the time? And I just had forgotten all about that period of my life when I was traveling around the country with Richard Orford, you know.
It's funny because that's the second time I've heard Richard Orford mentioned today, and I haven't heard his name for years. Isn't that weird?
What was the other occasion?
Someone on Twitter put a picture of him up. I know.
How spooky these things
are. I know. But yeah, it's weird school because obviously, you know, I don't really remember that. I had one friend, Craig, who I'm still best mates with. He's still my best mate. And I obviously had friends, you know what I mean? But he was my best mate. And I think that I didn't really do anything until I went to art college. And then I got there and suddenly realized I could be anyone I want to be. And there's no one to say you're not like that. So I could do whatever I want. And it was brilliant. Grew my hair, started wearing suits, looking like a dandy, you know. Just invented the fact I really like Northern Soul. And then after that, actually got into it. You know, it's like I was just saying anything, walking into college with eyeliner on, going, yeah, I'm really cool. he's really cool, that one. How do you know? He says he is.
There is nothing stopping anyone doing that, by the way. Tomorrow, you can wake up with someone completely different. There is nothing stopping
you doing that. It's exciting, really, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? No one does it because everyone's too nervous about doing it. What happened to him?
Imagine if you did it next Sunday morning. Well, tune in. You're in a vest with Wigan Casino written in the front. An eyeliner on.
And a bowling bag.
Yeah. Talcum powder everywhere.
All right. What's the key to a good relationship?
Well, I've learned this. Since I met Grace, which is, I mentioned earlier, I never argue.
Yeah.
And that got me, that can get you so far because I wouldn't argue with anyone. If the band wouldn't argue, I'd just leave the room and manipulate the situation until it went my way. But no stand up rows. And it kind of works with the band. But in a relationship, it doesn't work because you've got no one to go and manipulate it with. There's no relationship manager we've got waiting in the wings for me to go to and say, yeah, can you sort this out? Because, you know, the band are being a bit, Grace is being a bit weird about it. Anyway, so I've started arguing, started talking back, and it works.
How are you getting on?
It's scary. It's scary, but then you realise that she's got Italian blood, so she's very used to it. You know, when I first went to her house for Christmas, I was terrified. I thought the family were like, it was going to, like they were having arguments that I thought were irreconcilable. Is that a word? Yeah.
Mm.
But they weren't. They were just being themselves and they sorted it out. And also I've learned to try and stop brooding about it. Because I do, we have an argument and I'll think about it for 3 days where she's over it in 10 minutes.
What I think's funny about watching Italians speak English is they speak like us. They're just like, shoulders down, they're sort of slightly monotone and all that sort of stuff when they speak English, and then when they go into Italian the shoulders are like they go broad and the hands come out, and it's like, and but they don't speak English like that. It's only the Italian language. Suddenly all the hands come and it's like the gesture.
So yeah, you need to speak, that's the secret, speak Italian.
Do you speak Italian?
No, I don't speak anything.
Oh, you should learn.
I really wish. No, it's one of those things that I think I'm too old. It's like snowboarding. You get to a certain age and you can't do it.
Right.
You just can't.
You can.
I'd like to learn the piano. If I have kids, they are speaking languages and playing instruments.
You can learn anything you want. You're choosing not to. Just learn Italian. If you've got an Italian speaker with you, then just, you know.
She doesn't speak Italian either, which makes me even crosser.
She doesn't.
Her dad speaks fluent Italian. Her mum speaks fluent Spanish. I'm getting into trouble here. She's in the other room. She doesn't speak any languages.
barely speaks English.
This is a joke. She doesn't speak Italian either. She's good. Man. She's good. She's good on holiday. Like, you know, we can get by. I mean, I'm quite lucky because I've traveled the world a lot, and I can get by. I can order sandwiches in 40 languages.
You should learn together. That should be your thing. All right. How's your mental health?
That's good. I mean, I've had ups and downs over the years, but you know, I
met you once. You won't remember. I met you once when you were really sad.
Did you?
Yeah, and you were really sad, and I thought that's bad but I've seen every celebrity go through that stage. I think it's a lot to deal with, the adulation and the energies coming at you, you know, all the people just talking to you constantly, and you can't do anything wrong, and then there's a hate over there, and there's competition here, and I think it's quite a tough thing to deal with.
It's really difficult. How's my mental health? Because it's difficult to speak about without sounding like you're giving advice out, and it's different for everybody. And what I've found is I worry a lot, right? And I've stopped worrying about things I can't do anything about, which seems ridiculous because they're the worst things. But now I'm pretty good. But yeah, I mean, I've had really tough times with being in the band because it seems a lot more important than it actually is. And now the pandemic's done me wonders, and it's a really bad thing to say, but it has, because I don't really care about
not a bad thing to say at all.
I don't really care about, like, don't worry about physical things as much, about how much I own, what, you know, about possessions. I don't worry about that. We've been living, so we had this big house, we sold it, bought another one, couldn't move in because the woman that was in here was quite old and pandemic started. So we were living for, I don't know, 6 months in Catherine Ryan's old flat. Because we were looking for a flat that would take dogs, and we were looking online, and we found this place that I recognise that wallpaper. That's Catherine Ryan's wallpaper from Instagram. So I texted her, and she goes, yeah, it's available. So we moved in there. And then it was a small flat, and it was brilliant. Loved it. And now we've moved into this big old house. We've got loads of work to do. It hasn't started yet. So we're living in two rooms on the top floor. And it's like being students. And we're just like going, we really don't need more than this. We don't need it.
Mm.
And, you know, I've got the dog, I've got Grace. And it really puts things in perspective, because I really thought I needed this big house.
The golden lesson I've learned, the older I've got, the less I have, the better it is. You've just, you know, when people say, you were talking about it earlier, buying a fleet of cars, you know, sometimes they come on Sunday brunch and it's like, yeah, I own 16 cars. I just get huge anxiety. I'm like, oh God, I'd just sell them all immediately. It's like,
exactly. Yeah. I've had more than one house in the past, and it's been an absolute nightmare.
I said to my friends, that's what you want to do, is you spend your youth and younger trying to accumulate wealth and property and stuff like that. And when you get older, try and get rid of as much of it as possible.
Yeah. Definitely.
Simplify your life.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's weird. I once went to see a lawyer about something, and he's a lawyer for some big, big acts, right? And I was telling him I was worried about money worries and stuff. He goes, the thing is, I speak to, you know, singer X from whatever band. Let's say Chris Martin, right? I speak to Chris Martin, and he's got exactly the same worries as you, but it's like times 100. Mm. So he's worried about, you know, a yacht mooring, and I'm worried about a parking permit. It's the same thing, but it's just bigger, right? Now, he's got a lot more money to deal with it, but it's kind of the same shit going on in your heads. Yeah. And he goes, but you know what? It's easy. Get rid of your car. How often do you use it? Oh, don't. You don't need it then, do you? Don't need a yacht. Rent one for the weekend. It's like, I used to have a place, it just the sales going through it in Cornwall. And I was going to retire there, but then I got a second wind when I did The Voice, so I didn't move down there. And just getting rid of it now. And I was worried about it all the time. And I probably spent, you know, I wanted to, you know, split my time between here, there and London. And it never happened because I was just too busy. And I wasn't there, and I might as well have a big yellow storage, you know, it was like a storage facility for all my accumulated It's like a it was like my museum, which is weird. But now,
running out of time, got a few more questions.
So
just see if we can do. I'm gonna move them because I want to do this one first. I always like this. Is my favorite question of the podcast. Have you ever seen a ghost or a UFO?
Probably. I haven't. There's stories in my family about ghosts. My mum's seen a lot of them. I think it's weird because more than I've seen, and I was living with her. But no, I haven't, but I believe in both of them, which kind of makes me more, you know, I believe in UFOs. You daft not to. Well, not UFOs, alien life. I believe in it. You got to. If you don't.
But you believe they visited us?
Oh, I don't know about that. I believe that there's probably UFO stuff here. You know what I mean? Like remnants.
Now, the reason I asked this question, because I'd love to see a UFO. I'd love to see an alien. I'd love to see a ghost. And I've never seen any of them. And I'm jealous of all the people who have seen these things. And I spend so much time online. I can't believe in any of them because I haven't seen them, but I do believe in them more. And every time I see anything on UFOs, I'm straight in there.
Me too. I go on wild hour-long internet searches.
Yeah.
You know, I was doing one the other day about those, you know, those big people that used to live here that were kind of aliens and they were kind of like smooth, they look Scandinavian and I can't remember the name for them, but they built everything and created humans. A bit like Alien Resurrection, whatever it's called. I don't know. But they're learning about it.
Hold on, you're saying this is fact or this is...
No, it's what people believe.
All right, okay.
You know, and there's lizards living on the ground and all that. But then there was one thing about there's a line, like an equator, but it's on a different axis that goes around the world. And every one of the major kind of ancient monuments is on this exact line.
Yeah,
I found it hard not to believe.
Which is why I've tried to get hold of him, but he's not replied. But I want to interview that Graham Hancock guy. Have you heard about him? He's the one who believes there was a civilization as advanced as us, if not more advanced than us, which built the pyramids and everything, blah, 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 but got wiped out. And we've come since, but we don't realize they existed. And he's got reams of proof that I've listened to on his podcast. And, you know, I haven't read his book, actually. I should read that.
But should
I've listened
to a lot of stuff. Have you Googled the Baltic anomaly?
Oh no! I'm going to
Google it. Have a look at it. It's some people say it's a rock formation, but it's shaped. It's a spaceship. It looks like the Millennium Falcon.
And then there's the stuff in the Amazon, which they're starting to see that there used to be many more civilizations there than they believed. I love it all.
I know. I do too. I know. So it's not ghosts or UFOs, but it's kind of the same thing. It's just fascinating. I love it all. Baltic anomaly. There's something else I wanted to tell you about. Can't remember. It was something else I Googled the other day and I was like, this is fascinating. But yeah, all that crap. I love it.
When was the happiest you've ever felt?
I had no idea. Hopefully it hasn't happened yet. Happiest I've ever felt. There is video footage of us in a recording studio in Wales. And we were recording our first record and I Predict a Riot. We released it twice, but the first release went in the charts at 22. And we're crying. And it was weird. Like, we couldn't stop it. Just crying. We hadn't even finished recording our first record yet. And it was brilliant. I think that must be up there. It felt like you put your flag on its side. And you thought, at this point, we can't go lower than that.
Was that your first release?
No. Oh, my God. Was the first release. But we released everything twice in those days because no one noticed the first time. Well, it got to 22.
Yeah. Oh my God. Because Robbie Knox, who worked on Soccer M, I remember him coming to me and saying, because I used to choose the music for Soccer M, and he came to me and said, Tim, we've got to play this song. It's brilliant. I listened to it. And I went, oh, that's fantastic. And we put it on. And I remember when you guys came on Soccer M, you were just so like brilliantly excited to be in a band, like in a good way, not a bad
way.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Really enjoying being on TV and just thoroughly enjoying the experience, I think.
It's brilliant. I can still remember the kind of the feeling of that. And you can't put it in the words. It's like, you know, when you smell something from your youth and you go, it's like a really strong memory. Sometimes that comes in waves about that feeling we were just constantly tired because we'd never slept and we were traveling around the world, but it was just an amazing time. It was brilliant, but knackering. We all had, our own version of a nervous breakdown in the first couple of years just because we were overtired and overworked, but it was totally worth it. Like, I remember times where one of us wouldn't get on a plane. You know what I mean? We'd be going, I can't do it. Can't do it again. Like, I'll stay here. I'll sit here. Like, in, you know, Japanese airport going, I'll just sit here. I'll be fine. Leave me. It was weird.
I've been reading a lot. We've had various different presenters and I've been reading about them, and I read so many times about presenters saying, oh, I did this show hungover, I did that hungover, I did this. And I've never done a TV show hungover. And the reason being is I made it a bit later on in life.
Yeah.
And I could not believe I'd got a job in TV when I got
right,
it.
Right, yeah.
And I was like, I want to savor every minute of this, because I just assumed I would be on TV for 5 minutes, then just go. And I didn't want to do it hungover. Whereas a lot of the kids, they were all getting drunk and E4 lot and that lot, and then rolling in drunk. And the only time I've ever done something remotely drunk was when I did XFM. I was still hungover from going to an award ceremony, but my show was in the evening, so it was hungover from the night before. That was the only time when I was
the anxiety hours when it gets to the evening and you're toying with having a beer just to take the edge off. That's an horrible feeling. I mean, the older you get, the sooner that time comes. I'll wake up in the middle of the night with it, waking up going, I'm frightened of something and I don't know what it is.
All right, final question. What's the meaning of life?
I wanted to something I've changed my mind about. No, meaning of life, changing your mind. There you go.
You can do that question.
No, it's all right. I know, because I haven't really got anything good to say. I have got actually good. Change my mind. You know, Rob Beckett?
Yeah.
Comedian. When he first hit the scene, I didn't like him at all. But now he's my favourite.
He's funny. Funny guy.
It's weird, isn't it? It's weird how your mind changes. That's like when Friends, I didn't like Ross. And then you get older and you think he's the best one.
Yeah.
And Rob Beckett, he's hilarious. Love him.
The thing about Rob is he's funny in real life. He's, you know, some comedians, they've got a good act. They're not that funny in real life. He's funny in real life and he's got
a good
act.
Yeah, you do get some comedians that I equate a little bit to graphic designers who saw it on a list of things you can do and thought, that looks like a good... Everyone's doing all right in that job. I'll do that.
Yeah.
And then they do it and they're all right at it. But you think to yourself, yeah, maybe at school someone said you were funny and you ran with it, but you're not funny to the bones. You know what I mean? Mm. He's funny in his bones. And his show he does with Ramesh.
That's funny. Two of them, funny guys.
You know, that and Would I Lie to You are the only TV shows, apart from Sunday Brunch, of course, which I laugh out loud at, you know. It's really rare now to laugh out loud.
Would I Lie to You? I love Taskmaster. Yeah. Try that.
Taskmaster. Yeah, I've seen that. It's great. The last series before it went on, went into COVID, I thought was brilliant.
Yeah. So, what is the meaning of life?
Hey, that's a big question. It's a bonus question, I know, and I don't really know. You know, they say it's having kids. I haven't done that yet. You know. What is the meaning of life? Just, I don't want to give advice. Just literally suck all the joy you can out of it. You know, that's it.
I like that.
But there's always something good to, there's always, it, you know, and I'd heard this, I think it's Islamic phrase about God will never give you something he doesn't think, God will never give you anything he doesn't think you can't deal with. And I really like that.
Okay.
So all the bad stuff that happens is because you can deal with it.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Ricky.
Thank you.
The Lovejoy Hour is written and presented by Tim Lovejoy, produced by Blake Fellows, and sponsored by Quooker. If you want to get in touch, email lovejoyhour@gmail.com, or you can find Tim on Twitter and on Instagram.